www.radio.co.uk.
This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and my two studio guests. In the first half, we heard from Mr. Mark Beattie of Off-Broadway Travel. And in the second half, we're going to talk to my friend Simon Webster of Talis Independent Financial Advisors, and also my de facto co-host for this show.
Well, there you go. Mm. Good afternoon.
Good. I want to tell you about this. The Taste of Kent Awards 2022 are open for voting.
Oh, sounds good. Sounds good.
Absolutely. Celebrate Kent's food and drink by voting for your favourites. Have you found a restaurant that you'd like to rave about, or a favourite tipple that needs toasting? Then get voting in the Taste of Kent Awards 2022, now open to public voting. Produced in Kent's flagship event, recognises the best in food and drink that Kent has to offer. The voting is open to the public from the 10th of January to the 28th of February. Finalists will be announced mid-March, and the winners will be crowned in the glitzy awards ceremony at the Kent Event Centre on the 12th of May. Voting's never been easier. Go to the newly revamped tasteofkentawards.co.uk website and click the category you'd like to vote in and cast your vote. If you can't see the name of the business you'd like to vote for, add it.
Oh, there you go. That'll be a good one.
So that's good.
So what will be your restaurant of choice? What's your restaurant of choice in Kent at the moment?
We'll
give somebody a plug.
I've been eating mostly at the Pig and Sty at Betherston.
That's really good. I like it.
Which
there.
Is really nice.
Yeah.
Really nice. Where else have I been? I haven't really, you know, it's like a lot of things. I haven't really been anywhere for a while.
I like a Meech's in Central Ashford. That is really good. That's very, very good food there.
Yeah.
And it's on my doorstep, so that's handy from the office.
Yeah, what's the owner's name?
I can't think of the owner's name. He's a nice bloke. He's a chef.
Yeah, he's fantastic. He's been on the show.
Ah, right. I can't remember your name.
No, I can't remember. I can't remember his name because it was a couple of years ago when he first opened. He came on. Can't remember. Anyway, but yes,
it's
lovely.
Really good. Really good.
I was going to say, I think it's a good excuse to just go out and eat lots of dinners out for the next few weeks, isn't it?
Really? Absolutely. Yeah.
And just blame it on the fact that you need to be doing some research.
Yeah, I think that's a very good excuse.
Absolutely.
Paul and I don't usually need an excuse to go out and eat those. So
as you can see from my build.
Me both, mate. And me both. It says here, Brasher's sponsors Kent Leeds Castle concert for the sixth year running. Mm-hmm. Two iconic Kent brands will come together once again this summer as award-winning law firm Brasher's confirm as headline sponsors for the Leeds Castle concert for the sixth year. The iconic event takes place on Saturday the 9th of July. And I know this because Talis IFA is the second line sponsor. Because we did it last year. And it was a really, really good gig. So get on the website and book your tickets. It's a really good show. LeedsCastleConcert.co.uk. And Brochures put a lot of money and effort behind that. So they deserve a plug. We stick a couple of bob in. And it's a really, really good night out. They've got a Spitfire fly past. It was overhead for about 10 minutes on the last show. Really, really good news.
Really?
Definitely worth looking at. I've got Discovery Park launches Skills Hub. Do you want that, Paul?
Yeah, go for it.
Life Science Campus Discovery Park, based near Sandwich, has brought together the combined expertise of Canterbury Christchurch University, EKC Group, Pfizer, the STEM Hub, and University of Kent to create the Skills Hub. This is a way for tenants to offer further training to their workforce, as well as helping them to find new talent to drive their businesses forward. Jane Kennedy, Chief Business Officer at Discovery Park, said, "Gaining access to people with the right skills continues to be one of the biggest challenges facing businesses of all sizes and in many sectors. And this is our way to help." And it's true. Finding decent staff is really hard work.
Rocking horse poo.
Yeah, decent staff.
More chance
are rare
of finding
as.
Rocking horse poo.
Absolutely.
It's the tightest job market I've ever known. I was reading some survey data today. There's 1.2 million unfilled jobs and 1.4 million unemployed people, but there's over 500,000 people in that unemployed that are not currently looking for a job, and that's mostly because they're suffering long COVID, or from the pandemic. They've been pinged.
Mm.
They're between jobs. But I've never known a market like it. It is unbelievable. On Jobs in Kent, we've got 7,000 jobs at the moment, local jobs. But you just can't get anyone to apply for them.
No,
it's and that's really across the board.
Well, people are concerned that it's going to be last in, first out. I think there's a certain amount of move reluctance. People don't want to move job in a pandemic in case there's another lockdown.
Yeah.
And then they're the last person into the company. So obviously they'll be the first person who gets chucked out and,
exactly.
and they're worried about it. Hopefully over the next month or two, that will change. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's got to give at some point. Otherwise, we're in big trouble because... We're just creating jobs at an alarming rate, you know, depending on which way you're looking at it. We're creating jobs all over the place, and they're just not getting filled.
Well, it begs the question, how many of those jobs would have been filled by people from across the water back in the day that have now gone home and don't want to come back because of Brexit?
Yep.
Question mark. Yeah. I don't know the answer to that.
There is a certain element of that, without any shadow of a doubt. Of course, we still do have tier two visas, so you can import people to work. That tends to impact the lower end of the wage structure market, because you can only have a tier two visa if they earn more than $35,000 a year.
They might need to change the tier two visa rules.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we have to wait and see. It says here that the Marsh Network Online is back at 10:30 on Wednesday, the 19th of January, which is
tomorrow.
Manana. Book at marshnetwork.co.uk to ensure your place and bring a friend or contact along. If they're first time or they come free, just email terry@botfield.net to fix a free ticket. Speaker will be Brian Hall, the grants man, who will update us on his tagline. There's a grant for that. Okay. It's worth saying, I put some aircon in our building a couple of years ago, and I literally had my pen over the signature space to sign the order for $15,000. And I got an email from the chamber saying there might be a grant for that. And it was a very long, shaggy dog story. But after I filled in about the thesaurus full of paperwork, just a mile of it, I got $5,000. So it was almost worth the trouble.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to try and catch up on some tweets.
Okay, go for it.
And then we're going to talk to Simon.
Okay. Well, yeah. My turn to speak then, is it?
Yeah.
I haven't done any of that yet.
Chips and Dinks, sounds like another great show, providing us with much needed relevant travel advice. Looking forward to hearing more. That's the lovely folks, Bev and Tony at Chips and Dinks. Neville Gaunt, could I have a shout out, please, for my book, Everything You Should Have Learned at School But Didn't?
That would be a very long list for you and I, Paul, wouldn't it?
It certainly would. It was a long time since I was at school, and I wasn't there very very much anyway.
Well, I was very lazy.
I think I went in a couple of times, but that was all.
Yeah, just when they dragged you in chains.
We don't get taught anything practical these days. When I was in school, no. You just come out, you have no idea how to live.
Well, that's the scary bit. Practical finance, a subject close to my heart. Mm. Nobody knows how to do anything, balance a checkbook, order stuff, do things. They don't show them how to use Excel or Word. Yeah. You know, they teach them how to code, but don't teach them how to use basic office programs.
Yeah.
You ask kids, what's a spreadsheet? There's a load of kids coming out of school, don't even know what a spreadsheet is.
I just find it incongruous that after all this time, we don't teach people basics like, how to change the fuse in a plug,
How to change a tyre.
How to get a mortgage. How to organise a bank account.
Mm.
How to reconcile a bank. You know, basic stuff. Why not to use a credit card to borrow money? You know, just basic stuff. Mm. What do we do? You know, GCSE, you know.
Yes.
Fishing.
It makes us old codgers very cross, doesn't
it? Yeah, it certainly does.
We could be, a new show. We ought to have a sort of Tweedledum, Tweedledee, two grumpy old men.
Okay, well, this one you might like this.
All right.
Or not, as the case may be.
We'll see.
It's DG East, who are a vehicle supply company.
All right.
Yep. Many thanks to FSB Kent for being proactive in resisting the excessive fees increase from the FCA.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. More help than HM Treasury were, they say.
Yeah. Well, the FCA fees are outrageous. Yeah. We pay a fortune. And most of it's compensation levy paid to compensation schemes, where compensation schemes have to pay out because regulation hasn't worked. So you pay the FCA a fortune to be the regulator. Yeah. And then when they screw up, it goes ends up in the compensation levy. And the industry has to pay for that as well. It's wonderful.
Madness, yeah. I can't remember the exact numbers, but Terry, who's the guy behind DG East, was saying it had gone up like 160%.
Yeah.
And then they put it up another 290% or something stupid. Really ridiculous fees.
Mm.
And he's tweeted again, how about a shout out for a very frustrated business still suffering from FCA greed? I think he's upset somehow, and I don't blame him. Sounder Spitfire, who are a radio station up in Spalding in Lincolnshire. Thanks, Paul, for keeping us entertained and in the loop with all the business stuff from all of us at Sounder Spitfire. So thank you, guys.
Yeah, I think they used to take the money court feed at one stage.
Yes, I did. Yes,
yeah,
I did.
I remembered. It was six years ago, but I remember it.
Absolutely. And Tenterton Chamber, how about a shout out for the Chamber of Commerce team preparing for a busy new year of meetings and events? Here's a shout out for the Tenterton Chamber.
Right, we'll say it together. One, two, three. Tenterton Chamber.
There you go. You've been shouted out, well and truly. And one more thing before I talk to Simon about the world of finance, pensions, economy and anything else we want to talk about, just to announce the Business Awards 2022 applications are now open for the Ashford, Canterbury, Maidstone and Tunbridge Wells Business Awards. Each of those awards have categories for customer service, innovation, startup, which is a maximum of 3 years old, small business, businesswoman of the year, best family business and best construction business. If you go to www.businessawardskent.co.uk, you can find out all about it. And each of those awards has a geographic area around it. So it's not just Maidstone, it's, you know, all the areas around it. But if you go into that website, it tells you which one that you can apply for.
All right, it's worth doing.
Yeah,
it certainly is. You win an award, it can launch, it would be a useful platform. I tell you what, if you win an award, you could have a really successful travel and tourism business on the back of it, couldn't you?
Be invited onto radio shows.
You get invited onto radio shows because you're good. It's really, it works, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Win stuff. Yeah. I think you won an Entrepreneur of the Year award.
I certainly did. Funnily enough, yes, I did.
Quick slurp there. Go for
it. Yeah, sorry about that. I'm drying up. I actually won Entrepreneur of the year that Kiba launched. First, Kent Excellency in Business Awards.
All right, okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Which was 2009.
And you're still going, which is more than a lot of businesses that were around in 2009.
Just about.
Creaking along.
Yeah,
the business is still going. Your body, not so much.
Yeah,
I understand.
My body gave up a long time ago.
So I hear.
Thank you.
It's all around the staff canteen, mate.
Oh, absolutely. Simon, thank you for joining us as a guest, and thank you for your work as a co-host and a general...
dog's body.
A general dog's body. I want to talk a bit about where we are financially in the world. you're with Talis IFA.
I am.
You provide pension, investment and money-based services.
We do indeed. Yep. Advice in all those areas and many more.
Okay, well, give us an overview of the kind of things you cover. Because, you know, one of the things that quite surprises me quite a lot, again, talking about knowing basics, a lot of people don't really know who to speak to when they want to do things, you know. Just something basic like a mortgage, you know, that they'll ask their bank, and then outside of that, they're kind of stumped, really.
We find this quite a lot, and it's actually a great shame that the aforementioned FCA, which is supposed to promote public confidence in the financial services sector, has not done more promotional work to actually promote the work of independent financial advisors and our ilk. But primarily, we're active in four or five key areas. Firstly, we've got a mortgage team. Our mortgage team broke mortgages from the whole market. So you come and see us and we will go to your high street bank and we'll go to a whole pile of lenders you've never heard of and we will use computer software to find the best deal. And you don't have to walk up a whole pile of high streets trying to find out what's going on and run the risk going to a lender that will not lend to you but leaves a credit mark on your credit score that shows that you've applied for a loan and been turned down. And that actually means that your chances of getting a mortgage the next time are not quite so good. Not a lot. But it's there. So it's really important that you actually talk to somebody who knows what they're doing and can get that organised for you. One, just a general point on mortgage at the moment, the next move in interest rates will be up. So now is a really good time to fix your mortgage interest rate if you have not already done so. Mortgage interest rates at sub 2% are really, really, really worth having.
Yep. Too late. I got my mortgage increase yesterday.
Well, I'm really pleased to hear it. Didn't talk to me though, did you?
No.
But never mind. Well, I'll get him for that
later.
I've
got a question. So I think mine is still fixed.
Right.
Can you refix it early? in terms, to take advantage of that before the price increases?
You could, but the problem with a lot of fixed rates is they come with what's referred to in the trade as ERCs, which are early redemption charges, right. And effectively you could find that there's a penalty to get out. So what you need to do is some maths, and you work out what the early redemption charge is, and then you work out how much you think you're going to save if rates go up, and you take away the big number from the little number, and that's the answer as to which way you should go. Now, if you're not sure how to do that, talk to your friendly local mortgage broker at talisifa.com, and we'll help you get it sorted out, because we're good like that.
Cool.
So mortgages, one area.
I don't want to carry on too long, because there's a million things we could talk about, but mortgages are an area of interest. Because you know as well as I do, Simon, that people struggle to get onto the housing ladder.
Yeah, yeah.
And I saw something a couple of weeks ago, which I sent to my youngest, who is trapped in that thing.
Yeah.
Which was a company, and I can't remember the name. It was something like Hubel or Hubel. It's a relatively new bank or finance company, and they were offering mortgages at 7 times salary.
I've not seen that one, if I'm honest. Yeah. I've not seen that one. They probably want quite a large deposit and will limit it to professionals with upward going incomes.
Well, it was interesting. I've got to get this right. It was 10% deposit.
Yeah.
7 times salary over
30 years, probably.
40 years.
40 years.
Yeah. But it was a fixed rate for the entire life of the mortgage.
Mm. Well, that's worth thinking about. The only issue is it depends on the nature of the fixed rate, because what looks attractive at the beginning can get very expensive at the end. And this is where it's worth having a broker look at it for you. One of the things our software does automatically is it says, if you go to this loan, this would be the total cost, including fees, over the first 5 years. Okay. So the one that looks cheap at the beginning can often be the one that's the most expensive after 5 years because of fees or other bits and pieces. So it's really worth just having that conversation.
I think that's one of the issues with a lot of financial things, isn't it? It's the small print.
They're so damn complicated.
Yeah, it's very complicated. And a lot of people give up and just go, I'll just ask my bank because I probably trust them.
Yeah. HSBC, that's a great, you know, great. They're really getting a slaggy today. Sorry, lads.
Yeah, but you know, that again comes down to this basic fact that most of us haven't had any training whatsoever in how to manage our finances and what it's all about. And it's all a bit too complicated for you to, you know, when you're trying to do one thing and then, you know, look at something else and you go, well, you know, or I need a calculator to work. I don't know. I don't even know what these terms mean half the time.
Well, that's why it always pays to take independent financial advice. It's how we make our money. But we save clients sometimes hundreds, thousands of pounds on mortgages just simply by finding them the best deal that they wouldn't necessarily find themselves.
Well, let's clear that up, Simon, because I think that is one of the things that a lot of people are wary of going to an independent broker, because they think, well, it's going to cost me a fortune to get this advice.
Well, sometimes we charge clients a fee. Our typical fee is $395.
Right.
But, I mean, you could put that in the context of a £500,000 purchase or a £200,000 purchase. 395 quid is nothing, absolutely nothing. Most of the time, some clients come in, their situation's really, really complicated, and we're not sure we could even get them a deal, and we'll say, on that basis, we're going to do loads of running around. We need to charge you some money up front because we don't know what's going to happen, but we're not going to run around all day for nothing.
Yeah.
And that's the understanding. Yeah. Sometimes people come in, the transaction looks pretty straightforward on paper, and we say, okay, your transaction's pretty straightforward. We won't pay you a penny or charge you a penny until it completes. Mm. So if it doesn't go through, you don't pay us anything. Yeah. So there's lots of different ways of doing it, but an introductory chat with a financial advisor such as me will normally cost nothing. It's normally held at our expense because the meeting costs money, but we'll pay it effectively, and it comes out of the firm's budget for the time. But we are hoping that person will come on and do business with us or tell their friends. Actually, I went to see a financial advisor. He told me I didn't need anything, which was great. I was so pleased to get that information for free. I'll refer you, and somebody else comes in and they need a load of work to do. And we have that all the time.
Okay.
So mortgages, big deal, really big. The other one is protecting that mortgage. Yeah. I mean, the number of people that have a big mortgage is the biggest debt they'll ever have in their lives. There's a breadwinner, there's a wife with two kids, and there's no life insurance. Anybody who's in that situation is certifiably insane, in my view. And that's, you know, that's a pretty strong statement. But it's just daft to me that anybody would have this huge debt, and as soon as the breadwinner disappears, they're dead, the wife and kids are on the street because they don't. There's no way of paying that mortgage back.
That's right.
And the other one that always gets missed, and it's missed a lot within the profession, is health insurance. Most employers, particularly smaller employers, do not pay sick pay.
Yep.
If you're not at work working, your employer doesn't give you any money. Why? Because they go broke if they paid you for not working. It doesn't work. If you're in local government, you might get paid for 6 months. But what happens after that? And if you get long COVID and you can't work for 2 years, then after 6 months, you've got no money coming in. How do you pay your mortgage? So transfer the risk for an insurance company, and 30, 40, 50 quid a month, whatever it is, depends on your age and what you do, you buy a health insurance policy that will pay you a regular income until you get better or until your retirement age. You know, it can be organised that simple. And it's really straightforward to do and really important.
Interesting. Very interesting. And that leads me on to a question that somebody asked me the other day. And I want your view on this as well, Simon, which is about taking your pension early due to ill health.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see quite a lot of this over the next couple of years.
Well, it's one of those dark answers, dark arts, because there's no clear answer.
Yeah.
In theory, at the moment, the earliest you can access your pension is age 55, unless you're in a prescribed occupation such as professional footballer. Yeah. It's a very short list, which I don't have in front of me, and professional footballer is the one I can remember. Yeah. But that's the prime example.
Because they need the money, obviously.
Yeah. Well, there's an awful lot more footballers earning 50p a month. And
you're talking to someone that was paid £4 a week to play.
There you go. Well, I've seen you play. I'm surprised you got as much as that.
Yeah, right. But I pay £5 a week to go and play myself. So.
Do you?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. But certainly professional footballers can access their pensions early, which is great. And it is in the regs that if you are long-term sick and unlikely ever to work again, then you can, subject to HMRC, Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs approval, get your pension early.
Right.
But clearly, you'll have had less time to build that fund up, so the pension that you're able to access will probably be relatively modest, which is why it's so important to buy health insurance so that you don't have to.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of balancing act. But
I'm going to ask a daft question here, and I probably know the answer to this anyway, because even if you take your pension, you still have a tax liability on it.
Well, you have a tax liability on 75% of it,
right.
And you effectively, pensions, so you've got a pension fund, let's say it's 100,000 quid.
Yeah.
You're allowed to take 25% of that fund tax-free.
Yep.
Now, everybody says tax-free lump sum. You can actually take 25% of the fund on the drip tax-free over a period of years,
right,
if you want to, and the insurance company or pension provider that you're using has that facility, and you have to have both of those criteria.
Right.
But the other 75% of the fund comes out as taxable income.
Right.
Now, the first £12,500 of your income is a personal allowance and is not taxed at all. So if you have no other income, you can actually take 25% of the fund and then £12,500 a year tax-free because there's no tax on that bit.
Yeah.
If you took £75,000 out in one hit, having taken 25 grand tax-free, and assuming you had no other income, you'd be taxed £12,500, no tax, £32,000 tax at basic rate, and then the rest would be taxed at 40%.
Yep.
And a popularly not known or not well-known fact, what is the highest rate of income tax in the UK? Don't you answer, because you'll know. Do you know the answer to that one?
I have no idea.
It's 60%. 60%.
Marginal rate of 60%.
Because you lose personal allowance on income between £100,000 and £125,000.
Yeah.
So that slice of your income is taxed at 60%. It's a bit like the you lose child benefit over 50 grand a year.
Yeah.
There's another hidden tax that actually puts that tax rate up really quite high. So, yeah, lots of stuff there. So pension access early possible, subject to HMRC approval, and HMRC approval is not easily given. But while we're on the subject of pensions, as you're doing something else while I'm talking,
people, I'm listening.
No, I know you're listening, but we'll talk about it anyway. People often ask me, how much money do I need to retire on?
Yeah.
Well, we talked about 100,000 quid as a pension fund, which sounds, theoretically, like a lot of money, until you work out how far it goes. Well, what sort of return do people think they could get from their £100,000 invested? Now, you can get about 0.5% from cash. Inflation's probably trickling up, is nearly 3% probably now, but long-term inflation rate's probably about 2%, but say it's 3%. So in the investment return, possibly 5% might be reasonable. So you've got £100,000, that's going to generate £5,000 a year. That's 400 and something odd pounds a month. That is not a lot of money on which to live. So it's a really interesting balancing act that for the average... Well, I don't know, what's the average? For a lot of people, a pension fund of less than £500,000 is actually not that viable. £500,000 is worth £25,000 a year. Mm. Now, you can actually start dipping into your capital and eke some of that capital out so it lasts the rest of your working life, and you might get up to £30,000 a year, but your fund's deteriorating, and if there's a big dip in the market, you could get hurt. So, you know, you really need a big number in your pension to make sure that you've got a secure retirement, and the vast majority of people don't have it. Mm-hmm. And 3% employee contribution under auto-enrolment ain't going to cut it. Sorry, 4% employee contribution under auto-enrolment ain't going to cut it.
Nah. It's interesting as well, isn't it? Because... I want to use the term inflation, but inflation has almost become a meaningless thing because the way that they calculate inflation just doesn't account for most of the things that cause you grief when you're paying. Just as an example, it's okay having, let's say you had £500,000 in a pension fund, so you're going to pull down 20, 25k a year, but your living costs are going up almost exponentially. So, for instance, at that rate, for me, that wouldn't even pay my energy bills.
It's quite scary, isn't it?
My gas and electricity bill for December was £700.
At home?
Yeah.
At home?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness me. My gas and electric bill at the office for December was £1,000 for the office.
Right.
So that's it wasn't as bad as that at home, but it's a lot of money, isn't it?
I got a bill for my office in Canterbury. Go on, guess. Go on.
Well, I'm going to go with £2,500 between the two.
Nah.
I would say more. I reckon three and a half.
33,000.
Oh.
What, for gas, electric, or both?
Both. 33,000 for the year.
Oh, for the year.
Yeah, okay, 33,000 quid.
Well, hang on. I said £3,000, assuming we're talking monthly, because have been, and 3 times 12 is 36. I wasn't far off.
All right, yeah. I'm not paying it, mine, because they're wrong. But
we've got to watch out for the estimates on these things, but it really is an issue. Yeah. It's going to be very interesting to see whether the government actually does something in the 3 weeks before a lot of people will see significant increases in their utility bills.
Yeah.
There's a lot of noise coming from the Westminster bubble about actually doing something, lending money to the utility companies to defer this bill problem.
But for me at the moment, being as I am past retirement age, so it's something that's very prevalent for me right now, is trying to balance this. How much money you have in a pension fund versus what you can get out of it versus your living costs.
Yeah.
And at the moment, your living costs are exceeding what you're making to some extent in a pension fund. So it's not just about how much money you've got in a pension fund. It's actually what it's invested in and what the returns on it are as well.
Yeah, you must need a really good financial... Oh, you've already got one.
I've already got one, yeah. I wonder who that is.
I don't know. My little halo is shining there. It's done quite well recently. Yeah, so the thing, however, is that people need to give this a bit of thought a lot earlier than traditionally they have.
Yeah.
The sort of standard joke in financial services is when you're 20, you're thinking about maybe buying a house, maybe buying a car and having a party. But really, that's the time you should start planning your pension.
Yeah.
And some people do, and they start putting £50 a month into their pension, and then they carry on doing £50 a month in their pension until they're 65 and say, well, I've got a pension. Well, there's not much there. Yes, because your income kept going up over all these years and your pension contribution never kept up. So really, it's such a good thing to do.
Mm.
And the other thing that we say to people, which is worth hearing, and this is going to get ever so slightly technical, so I apologise, but traditionally, most people think about retirement as a destination. You get to 65, you retire, you take a pension, you stop work, and that's it, and you live on that. Now, for a lot of people, retirement's effectively a journey. You slow down. You go down to a three-day week. You possibly don't get your state pension until 67 or maybe 68 if you're very young now. So you've got that to factor in. But what's happening for a lot of people is that the retirement becomes a journey. So you've got this pension pot that you might think about dipping into from time to time to support your income. But here's the thing. Actually, your pension pot should be the last money you spend. Why? Because your pension pot sits outside your estate for inheritance tax purposes. Now, if you're in the situation where you won't be paying inheritance tax, switch off mentally for a minute because it doesn't affect you. But if you're lucky enough to be somebody who's in that situation where IHT is going to be an issue, what you want to do is spend all your savings, spend all your ISAs, because effectively your estate's going to get a 40p in the pound discount while you get rid of all your taxable savings, and you can pass your pension to your children, to your girlfriend, to your boyfriend, to any member of your family you like, tax-free outside of your estate.
Can you pass your pension to more than one person?
Yes.
So if let's say I wanted to pass it to my two sons,
yeah.
I go, right, you can have half and you can have half.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And what you can do is you can say...
You're not getting it, by the way, boys. That was a theoretical question.
No, you don't want them to encourage them to bump you off.
Yeah.
But you can do it on a contingent basis. Mm. So one of the standard wordings we're using now is I leave my pension pot to my wife, but if she doesn't want it or predeceases me, then it goes to my kids equally. Yeah. But it keeps it outside the estate for tax purposes, and all that money, you can have £1 million in a private pension pot, if you're lucky enough to have that sort of money, you can have £1 million in that pension pot, pass that, all that money, tax-free to your children if you die before the age of 75. They have to pay income tax on it if you die after 75, because the revenue supported you building a pension pot all your working life, so they want some of their money back. But either way, it's a huge, huge win. Absolutely.
That's the one that always gets me, is this 75 thing. And I'm like, hold on a minute. You know, hold on a minute. You want it all back if I make it to 75. What are you trying to tell me?
No, yeah. the key
send
issue,
me to Wuhan.
The key issue, Paul, quite seriously, is if you actually do the maths, yeah. They don't want it all back. They want a tiny little bit of it back, because you've had tax relief on your contributions, growth in a tax-free fund. You can take 25% out tax-free, and then effectively just if you keep going till age 75 and you built up all that tax-free income, they want a little bit of income tax back at the end. Now, a little bit is a relative expression, but given the choice between a little bit of income tax or 40% IHT bill, it's actually a no-brainer. It really is a win-win. And, you know, the average life expectancy might be 80-something now, but that still means there's an awful lot of people die before age 75, and it's a tax-free win.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely worth doing. It's financial planning 101 these days. It really is.
Just not that this is going to affect me or anyone that I know, but if you do reach £1 million in your pension fund,
yep.
What happens then?
Well, then you have to pay a bit of extra tax if you take it out. It's now £1,073,000 or some random number that they've introduced, because it was £1.5 million. They bought it down because there's too many rich people taking advantage of the pension system. So if you exceed what's referred to in the trade as the lifetime allowance, then you pay quite a lot of extra tax if you take it out as tax-free cash, and 25% tax if you take it out as income on top of income tax.
Right.
So it's not necessarily the end of the world, as some people think it is, but it is an extra tax bill.
Right.
So the trick is, at that point, if there's two of you, you start sticking £1 million in the partner's pension plan, or you look at VCT or EIS or something like that, which are other tax-efficient schemes that the government allows that are perfectly legitimate, they're actually in legislation. If you invest like this, we'll give you tax relief. So it's all worth doing. Pensions are just one bit, but it's really the fairly seriously wealthy, because I think it's probably about 5% of people or less get to £1 million pension fund. So it's not that common. And probably only about 10 or 15%, and like most statistics, they're made up on the spot, and this is another one, but it's probably only 15% of people that get to £500,000.
Right.
So, you know, those that are in that rarefied atmosphere are incredibly fortunate.
Yeah, okay.
You don't know what to ask me next, do you?
Yeah, no, I do, and I've forgotten what I was. I had a question all lined up, and
you ask a question, and we'll talk about the tax deadline in a minute.
So you said that obviously people in their 20s should start to consider pensions.
Yes,
I've already gone through my 20s and hadn't really paid much into a pension apart from the bare minimum through employment.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm assuming that, you know, I would be your perfect client. I need to come and have a chat with you, and you need to get my financial affairs in order. But
I don't know if you'd be our perfect client, because our perfect client arrives with a load of money that we look after for, because we can make more money out of those people. But in terms of somebody who ideally needs some decent independent financial advice to get them sorted out, yes, you would be a very good client, and we'd be very pleased to help you. Because really, it's just sitting down and working out the maths. If you try and imagine a timeline, I'm now drawing in the air, dear radio listener, so this works really well on radio. If you imagine a timeline from your age 20 to your age 67 or 68, if you're 20 now, that's the distance you've got to go. If you imagine a point somewhere over the 60, age 68 that you've got to get to from age 20, it's a reasonably steep climb, but it's doable. If you move that to 30, the hill to get there gets ever steeper. You go it to 50, you're mountaineering. So effectively, that's the indication of how hard it is to save for retirement the later you leave it. The problem is, there's always calls on your finances. I don't know anything about you personally. I can't see a wedding ring, whatever. But there might there might be kids, there might be wife, there might be other stuff, that mortgage that you're paying your money on. And it's actually really tough to save for retirement when you're starting out. We've all been there. I had no money when I was 30. It was awful. But, you know, you've got to actually save for retirement. And it's a sort of a mind shift and a sort of almost a paradigm shift to actually say you've got to start thinking about living within 85-90% of your income and putting the rest of it into pension all your working life. And effectively, the way people think today is that I need all my money to support my lifestyle and I haven't got any money to put in pension. Well, actually, you should actually change the way you think. Yeah. And it's a really big, big thing.
I've remembered the question I wanted to ask you.
Go for it.
What's the different types of pension? One of the things, and you made reference to it earlier, the government a couple of years ago introduced this workplace pensions nonsense.
Yeah.
A lot of people now go, "Oh, I've got a pension, I've got a workplace pension." With pensions outside of that, what kind of pensions they are? So I have a SIP, for instance. Yeah. So just run us through what are the alternatives and what a SIP is for those that don't know.
Well, a SIP is a self-invested personal pension plan, and generally they're reserved for the more sophisticated investor, which I find hilarious because Paul's got one. But they're very useful, particularly if you want, for example, to buy commercial property. One of the most useful reasons for holding a SIP is to actually buy a commercial office building. Funnily enough, my SIP holds a commercial investment. So, you know, I have one myself, so they're a good thing.
Yeah.
But if you're an average punter with £100,000 or £200,000 and all you want to do is buy collective, so just buy funds, a SIP is an extra layer of expense and cost that you have to pay for every year that you don't necessarily need. I mean, the average SIP costs between £500 and £750 a year just for the wrapper. It's because all a pension is a bucket for holding £50 notes. That's all it is. And there's lots and lots of complicated legislation around pensions to stop rich people taking advantage of the tax system. But if you think about it, a pension is just a bucket for holding £50 notes. And the more £50 notes you can get in your bucket during your working life, the better retirement you're going to be able to afford. And it's really as simple as that. Now, what colour bucket you need in terms of what contract you put around your pension savings, for most people, a bog-standard thing you can buy on the internet would probably do okay, in all seriousness. Hmm. And I'm talking myself out of work here, but do something is better than doing nothing. And then you can always, because most modern pensions have no exit charges, used to be you buy an insurance contract and there was commission involved and you actually pay a fortune to get out of contract one and move to contract two. Now, nearly all pension contracts, new ones, have no exit charges. So you build your money up in pension one. It turns out not to be great. You might have to pay somebody to move it for you, but that's a small charge. And then you move it to contract two, which might be a SIP when you're ready.
Yeah.
So there's lots of flexibility. I think I've set up two regular premium pension contributions in the last 6 months for people who've just come in, that they've been existing clients or friends or family, because it's not our core business. Our core business is I've got this £250,000 pension fund or bigger. How do I invest that to get the best value? And we do a lot of that. We invest about £100-150 million of client money in portfolios that Talis runs and organises, and they're doing pretty well, and we're very proud of them, as it happens. But helping people get set up is growing tomorrow's clients. And if you're an entrepreneur and you're a family business and you're going to be doing something in the years to come, the wise financial advisor, even old so-and-sos like me, will still say, well, you'll be a great client for the firm in 10 or 15 years' time when you've had some other stuff, and we could do some protection for you, you can organise your mortgage, and we could do this. So any excuse to have a conversation with people, because we often find that people think they're organised, and then we say, well, what about that? Oh, I hadn't thought about that. How can we deal with it? And that's effectively how we make our money. We actually add that little extra bit of value, ask that little extra question that somebody hasn't considered before. And because it's all we do, people find it really helpful.
See, fantastic.
I think it comes back on your point earlier on about we don't get taught that type of thing in schools. I came out and I've never, apart from the workplace pension, I've never had anything or anything like that because I've never been told that that's what I need.
Yeah. Until
almost it's too late. And that's the thing.
It is, you know, I'm the same. You know, when I was younger, I worked for a bank, yeah? And they go, oh, you need, I'm going to the pub. Yeah. It isn't until much later in life where you start to face these kind of things where you suddenly realise, do you know what, I wish I'd paid attention to this earlier. Mm. And not least of which, because if you'd started 10 years earlier, you'd have a huge heap more money because if you invest money correctly, it grows almost exponentially.
Albert Einstein once described compound interest as the most powerful force in the universe.
Yeah.
Because if you draw a parabola, a curve on a graph, it goes up at an increasing rate. And that's what compound interest does. Very quick story. Got time for a very quick story?
Very quickly.
Very quick story. I got asked to go and do a talk at school. Mm. And I was talking to a bunch of 16-year-old girls at a local private school. And I was sort of saying, right, let's pretend you've left work and left school and you're now started work. Let's talk through how much money you would get. So you've just left school, what are you going to earn? And they were saying, well, $35,000 a year. So now hang on, average wage in Ashford at the time was about $12,000 a year because it was about a few years ago. So they were double what they thought they'd earn. And then we worked out how much tax they would pay and how much money they would have left at the end of the month, disposable income. And we got it down to about 25, 30 quid. So you've worked all month and you can now spend £25 of the money you've made, and I bet most of you drop more than that on Daddy's credit card most weekends, and they're all going, yeah. One girl, when I told them what the tax bill was, she actually said, that's outrageous. I said, imagine how your dad feels. He's probably paying rather more than that to afford to send you here, darling. Yeah. It was hilarious, but kids just don't know.
Yeah. And you know, that is one of the big problems. Sadly, I spend a large part of my life on social media arguing with people about tax. Yeah, the amount of people that come out with absolute nonsense. Well, rich people ought to. If they took all the tax off of billionaires, no one would be poor in the world. You go, arithmetic's not your strong point, is it?
No, absolutely not.
So, absolutely. You know, I'm a great believer in educating people about this, and sadly it's getting their attention, you know, because it's just not exciting for them at that stage. It isn't until you're much older in life that it becomes not only exciting but necessary.
It's probably worth saying, we've mentioned the tax word just very quickly, there's a rumor going round that the tax deadline has been extended to the 28th of February.
I think I started that.
Well, you certainly contributed to it, Mr. Andrews, and it's sort of correct. The deadline for filing your tax return online is still the 31st of January, and you're supposed to pay any tax that's due by that date. And if you don't pay by that date, you have to pay HMRC interest on top of your tax bill. There is an extension to the 28th of February, where if you file your tax return online before the 28th of February, you won't get fined £100 for late filing, but you will still pay interest for the late payment of tax. Therefore, to all intensive purposes, get your tax return filed by the 31st of January and pay your tax bill, otherwise you're going to come a cropper.
Fantastic. On that note, Simon, thank you so much for that. Fascinating talking to you, as always. Please, please, people out there, please look at your finances. Please do something.
Call TalisIFA.com.
I'm going to go and have a meeting.
There you go.
I'll go and have a chat.
Yeah. All right, I've got my diary here. We'll get it organised off air in a minute.
Cool. Let's hear this from our supporters.
Loch Associates Group can help you with your employment law, HR, health and wellbeing and mediation needs. People are our business. It's what we do every day. Find us online at lochassociates.co.uk.
Grow your business with Kent's Best Business Events. Visit bestbusinessevents.co.uk. Talis Independent Financial Advisors can help you invest, organise your pensions, and even get you the best possible life insurance, mortgage, or equity release deal. Check out talisifa.com.
You're listening to Channel Radio.
The Federation of Small Businesses News Roundup. Offering advice and guidance for small businesses and the self-employed.
It's that time in the show again when we cover news from the Federation of Small Business. I've got a number of events that are taking place. I'm going to read them all out, and then at the end of it, I will give you the link to find out more and to book your place. New Year, New Markets. No, that was yesterday. Networking, let's talk technical for engineering, manufacturing and transport sector. There's a webinar taking place tomorrow, Wednesday the 19th of January, 10 a.m. till 11 a.m. You're invited to a new virtual networking focus group. It's a national network designed to grow your contacts within these sectors. And they're going to meet on the third Wednesday of every month. And it's just for an hour. On Thursday the 20th of January, 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., creating the perfect sales pitch. If you're selling a product, service or concept to new or existing clients, this is for you. Don't miss this fascinating one-off session with an award-winning business coach and training solutions provider showing sales teams of business owners how to design and build a tailor-made winning pitch. Also on the 20th of January, 8:45 a.m. to 2:15, so quite a long one, FinTech Innovation for Small Businesses. This is a virtual conference. Join the FSB and FinTech Circle for the first annual conference focusing on FinTech solutions for micro and small businesses, giving you an opportunity to meet and engage with FinTech solutions. Wednesday the 26th of January, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m, transition to net zero with the Zero Carbon Business Portal. On the Thursday the 27th of January, how to secure and manage public relations for your business. That's 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. And then Wednesday the 26th of January, 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. is Kent Virtual Networking. Join us for this Kent-based relaxed networking event with like-minded business owners. Everyone is welcome. At this event, our guest speaker will be Tracy McRobert, a grant writer specialist, who will give some hints and tips on claiming business growth grants. That's not
definitely
easy to
worth
say.
Having. No, it's not, actually. It's a mouthful.
Yeah.
And you've got your mother's teeth in, haven't you?
I have.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm breaking them in for her. She's only 93. Video marketing workshops. This is a three-session webinar. Session one, Video Marketing Foundations, starts on Friday the 28th of January, 10:30 a.m. to 11:45. Session two is Friday the 4th of February, and session three is Friday the 11th of February. And they recommend that you attend all three sessions, and attendance at each workshop can be counted towards your CPD target.
That's worth having.
It's certainly worth having.
We all need some CPD.
Absolutely. Wednesday, the 2nd of February, the five key strategies to profitable business growth, delivered in conjunction with Advice for Business. This webinar will cover ways to reduce working hours in the business, how to tweak your business model to become more profitable, and give you techniques for improving cash flow. And the expert speaker is Linda Lowther. On Thursday, the 10th of February, is Kent Women in Enterprise Virtual Networking. Join us for the Women in Enterprise brunch and have the opportunity to promote your business and link up with fellow entrepreneurs. On Tuesday the 15th of February, 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m, negotiations, structuring better outcomes.
Whoa.
FSB Merseyside and Cheshire is delighted to welcome back Claremont Training and Development Stuart Maddox for the third in our national series of events leading to more effectively business outcomes. And then on Kent Business Summit 2022, after the success of the Kent Business School Business Briefing on the 14th of January, tickets are now available for the in-person Kent Business Summit, which will now be held on the 27th of April. I'll give you more details of that as we get closer to the date.
Yeah, that should be a good day.
Yeah, it's actually the annual Kent Summit, Business Summit. It'll be a fourth or fifth one. I can't remember. Held at the University of Kent Business School. Brilliant day. Do go along to it. But we'll give you more details as we get a bit closer. But it's going to take place on the 27th of April. And I just need to tell you about it. Well, okay. All of those things can be found in detail and the booking links by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/FSB. kentbusinessradio.co.uk/FSB. All of them are there. All of them have more detail and the booking links. And we continually update that page as new events come in on a daily basis. There's a free two-day ticket to the SME Expo on February the 23rd, 24th at Olympia, London. SMEs are the backbone of the UK economy. Ensuring our SMEs can survive and more can be set up is more important than ever. That's why the Evening Standard has launched the SME Expo, a new exhibition and conference for SMEs, which takes place in Olympia, London, 23rd to 24th of February 2022. More than 100 speakers will offer 120 hours of free learning and strategy, investment, scaling up, sustainability and more. The event, which will also feature 100-plus best-in-class suppliers, is supported by the Department for International Trade, Cisco and the FSB. You can register for a free two-day ticket today and hear from the founders and CEOs who took their small businesses from good to great and learn from the mistakes. Absolutely. If you want to find out more, www.smeexpo, that's smeexpo.co.uk.
There's a quick line there, isn't it? It used to say, a wise man learns from his mistakes.
Absolutely.
Of course, it's not true. A fool learns from his own mistakes. A wise man learns from other people's.
Oh, absolutely.
I like that one. A wise man learns from other people's mistakes.
That is very true, Simon.
Well, I try. It's just every so often I put something in.
We're almost at the end of the show. I just want to see, have you got anything that we need to read?
I think I have shot my load here. I think it's absolutely everything I've got, I've done. Hang on. Social Enterprise Kent. Have you or somebody you know received a new device, such as a smartphone or tablet, over Christmas period that you need to help using? Social Enterprise Kent are offering free digital support, either one-to-one or in groups, at a location of your choice. To find out more, contact @socentkent or phone 01843210005.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. I've had a tweet from Jules.
How's she doing?
She doesn't say. What she does say is, if it's not too late, I wanted to ask Mark if he thinks all this PCR testing could be made easier for travellers.
Yes and no. So the testing coming back into the country is going to stay. So we actually had a meeting with Grant Shapps because he's our constituent for our head office. And the testing is how they're monitoring the new variants coming back into the country. So the testing on the way back in will stay. However, the government has already made that an antigen test, so you literally come home, no isolation, go home, do a lateral flow test, and only if you test positive do you have to go and actually have a verified PCR test now, which is much easier. And I don't think it's necessarily going to change much aside from that. I do think going forward in the next couple of months, a lot of the testing to go outbound will change. As we've discussed, all of the countries are going to start to relax their rules. So I think that potentially will be...
It's going to get easier.
It will be easier, yeah. Definitely.
And they're also reducing, in the UK anyway, reducing the quarantine times now down to 5 days, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think people are starting to recognise that after the initial panic about Omicron, it's actually not as serious as people were worried about.
Yeah.
And this is how Spanish flu petered out in the 30s, 20s and 30s, and I think this is going the same way. And hopefully, I mean, I hope I'm right, because we don't know yet, but hopefully we are in the end time, and in 2 or 3 months' time, we'll start to be able to think, yes, we can live life normally now, hooray. We'll wait and see, because there's so much unknown.
You're absolutely right. Most epidemiologists will tell you that's how viruses eventually peter out, is that they become much more virulent but much less
effective.
Well, a virus that effectively kills its host can't replicate.
Exactly.
So they're actually it's much more efficient to create a virus that infects people but only mildly, so it can keep replicating. And the viruses, in inverted commas, want to be as effective and as spread as possible.
Absolutely. Yeah. On that positive note, we'll say goodbye for another week on the Business Monk Show. A huge thank you to this week's show sponsors, the lovely folks at ZC Social Media, to my two fantastic guests, Mr. Mark Beattie of Off Broadway Travel, Mr. Simon Webster of Talis IFA. You've been listening to the Business Monk Show. We'll be back with another show next week. Have a fantastic week, everybody, and we'll see you soon. Bye for now.
Bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.